From the bird-friendly studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another crash-proof hour of chemical-free horticultural hijinks, you bet your garden. Big windows are great for us, but bad for birds because they can't see the glass. I'm Mike McGrath, and on today's show, we'll discuss an easy and proven way to prevent bird collisions, plus the secret path to a lush, chemical-free lawn, and of course, your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and critically coherent confabulations. So stay right where you are, cats and kittens. It's all coming up like you having your view and seeing the birds, too.
WDIY has been broadcasting in the Lehigh Valley and beyond for 30 years, providing news.
These planes were hijacked.
The Bethlehem Steel Corporation will end its steelmaking production in Bethlehem.
We hope that you enjoyed hearing from the Dalai Lama.
Local public affairs.
As I say, it's a race of interest.
What we're experiencing today will later on be studied.
And music.
My name is Janice Ian.
Our guest, Lake Street Dive.
In a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Petey Yarrow from Peter, Paul, and Mary.
WDIY, since 1995.
Like most of us, I have to be careful about how much stuff I read on Facebook, especially the fascinating stuff that inexplicably finds its way to me. Even worse is when I click on things deliberately, from National Geographic, the New York Times, the New Yorker. You got to be careful with those clicks. Those articles are not a quick read. The Washington Post and the Philadelphia Inquirer. Oh, come on. Headline, where can you find the best Italian hoagie in the Philadelphia area? For an old row home corner boy from Bridge and Tarsdale, this is an important must-read article that cannot be ignored. So I learn a lot of stuff. But I also look up and see that I've been learning a lot of stuff for 2 hours when I should be working on this show. Anyway, an article from a Facebook group named Weird Science, which has over 1 million subscribers, somehow found its way to my computer, and I have to share it. They didn't headline it, but we're going to call it, "And You Thought Your Seeds Were Old." And I quote, in 2007, Russian scientists found a treasure hidden in Siberia's frozen ground, a 32,000-year-old seed of Silene stenofolia, a small white Arctic flower stored by an Ice Age squirrel in a burrow along the Kolyla River. Short detour to Wikipedia. The flower's name is derived from the Greek words for narrow and leafed, and its common name still is narrow-leafed campion. The seed, preserved in permafrost at -7 degrees centigrade, was found in one of 70 fossilized burrows containing over 600,000 seeds and fruits. Led by Svetlana Yashina and David Gilichinsky, the team extracted tissue from the seed's placenta, a sugary part that acts like antifreeze, and grew it in a lab. By 2012, the flower had bloomed and produced new seeds, smashing the previous record of a 2,000-year-old date palm. The regenerated flower is nearly identical to the modern plant, specimens of which were found growing nearby, but with slight differences in petal shape, thus proving that permafrost can preserve ancient life. The burrow, 38 meters underground, was surrounded by mammoth and woolly rhinoceros bones, untouched by water or warmth since the Palestine era. The team used radioactive dating to confirm the seed's age, ensuring it wasn't the product of contamination, by the modern plants growing nearby. The breakthrough, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, presented the flower as a living link to a world of ice and megafauna. Sadly, Tim Leader Gilashinsky died days before the 2012 publication, but his work inspired global research. Austrian scientists have studied the flower's DNA to learn how it survived so long, hoping to improve seed storage for future crops. The discovery suggests that permafrost could hold other ancient plants or even animal tissue like those of mammoths for revival. However, climate change threatens this natural cryobank, with rising temperatures melting Siberia's ice, risking the frozen relics. The article concludes that this story blends science, history, and hope for preserving life. And yet, I can't help but hear Jeff Goldblum yelling warnings off in the distance.
WDIY presents a selection of award-winning podcasts that air weeknights from 6 to 7 p.m. Listen to important conversations regarding art, science, business, health, and more here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Check our website for new topics and archived programs. WDIY podcasts are on 88.1 FM, streaming at wdiy.org, on the app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA. I am still your host, Mike McGrath. In just a little bit, I will teach you the dirty little secrets of lawn care after another of your fabulous phone calls. At 616, I can't remember my own phone number. At 610-694-8100. Deborah, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, great to be here.
It's great to have you here, Deb. Where is your here?
I'm in Regalsville, Pennsylvania. I'm by the Delaware River,
right.
Between Hellertown and Easton.
Okay, well, you're still technically in the Lehigh Valley, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, what can we do for Deb in Regalsville?
Okay, so in 2015, I purchased at the very same time a Meyer lemon and a key lime from a reputable mail order nursery. In 2019, I had a banner year for lemons. I literally had 30 huge lemons that were ripened in time for our Christmas gathering. So my husband was making lemon martinis for everybody. They were marveling at this tree. Everything was sunshine and roses. Now, someone along the way told me the limes would take much longer. Of course, I didn't think it would take 10 years, but we had lemons only from 2019 to 2021. I always have buds, and it looks like it's going to be great. But the last couple of years, I had none. I bring them in at the first sign of cool weather to the warmest part of my house, which might not seem warm to you at 60, but the rest of my house is 50. It's in full sun all winter. I lightly water. And then in the spring, I fertilize. I'm not really big on chemicals, so I use an organic citrus. And I put maybe a tablespoon in every week or so from January till now.
Okay.
And that's it. And no limes, but lovely foliage. I don't know. I feel like all I do is drag them in and out and take care of them, and they give me nothing.
So you have green, glossy leaves.
Absolutely.
But as of now, you're not even getting flowers?
Well, I do have a lot of flowers on the lemon, which looks promising, and I see tiny little yellow microscopic lemons, which have fooled me before because I've seen them in the past and not actually had the lemons come to fruition.
Yeah, no, they can drop at that stage.
Yeah, and I do have some flowers on the lime, but I'm not saying I've never had them. I've just never actually gotten the fruit.
All right. You said you bring them in at the first sign of cool nights.
Correct.
You know, the rule with indoor citrus is, yes, it loves to be outdoors for the summer. But they are tropical plants, and they have no sense of humor about nights, you know, forget the 40s, even in the low 50s.
Right.
So they are the first plants to come back inside. You should jump the gun on bringing them back, and you should be slow to jump in the spring. Make sure the weather is really stable. You do take them outside, right?
Oh, yeah. I bring them in every single night, and they're sitting out now, but they're going to come in again tonight. So I'm pretty diligent. I've got great biceps.
So, yeah, I was going to say, so you're hardening them off for the season?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess I am. I feel like it's too cool at night to leave them out. So,
when did you first put them back out?
Probably a week and a half ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah, our area has had frighteningly high temperatures, including the nighttime temps. So you're not doing anything wrong there. You say they get full light in the winter. That's quite a trick because nobody gets full light in the winter. There aren't a lot of hours of daylight to begin with, and the sun's rays are very slanted at that time of year, and it doesn't encourage photosynthesis. So tell me where they live inside.
So I have a second floor of my house, which has a spectacular view, lots of bright light, which is the opposite of my house, which is cold and kind of dark. Upstairs, we have a heating system, which never falls below like 64 degrees. Like it's always on, but we are diligent about checking it and watering it, and I keep a humidifier on, and I mist it also with water.
Those are both good. Those are both good. Where are the plants in relation to this light source?
They are about 2 feet away from the slider doors. When it's really bright out, I keep the curtains open, and when it's kind of dark and very cold, I'm trying to keep the cold out, so I close them.
That was my other question. Does it get cold around those doors at night?
No, that's why I keep it far back. Like, I really put a lot of effort into this.
Okay, well, you're not doing a lot wrong. So one thing I want you to do is get a bunch of Q-tips and hand pollinate the flowers on the lime. And then any flowers that are still open and you see the pistils inside and anything on the lemon as well. Don't cross them. That would be weird. But hand pollinate the flowers. Some people will also have a small fan going back and forth over them to keep, the pollen moving and the air circulating, because really, it's just a breeze that pollinates them inside. And they seem to really enjoy getting that help. You say you're watering weekly. How do you water?
I just have a watering can upstairs, and then I just sort of give it a little bit, like I do when I bring my figs in, just to kind of give them a little bit, but not too much to trick them into doing anything that they're not supposed to be doing.
Okay, but they're totally different plants. Your fig is dormant. These are actively growing. As you have learned, citrus, because it's from the other side of the world, I guess, or, you know, totally opposite climate, it fruits and flowers in fall and winter. So that is the time to feed it correctly. Are there saucers underneath these big plants?
Yes.
Do you allow water to collect in the saucers?
It does collect in the saucers sometimes,
Okay. Because what I would like you to do is back off on the watering, but water more thoroughly when you do water. Little bits, you know, from a watering can, they're very pleasing to us. They're like a Norman Rockwell painting. But really what plants want, especially trapped plants indoors, is they want to get completely saturated and then completely dry out and then get completely saturated again. So even though they're actively growing, they're still not using a ton of water in the wintertime. You should never see water in those trays unless you just finished watering and it hasn't been drawn back up into the plant. Now, this feeding you do, when you bring them inside for the fall, again, you should rush the season, bring them back in as early as you can, and then you can give them a gentle dilute feeding. And you said you're feeding once a week?
Yeah, I don't use a whole lot of stuff, so I probably put a tablespoon in a week, and I start in January.
A tablespoon of what?
Of citrus fertilizer.
Okay. A granular liquid, what?
Correct. Granular.
Oh, okay. So how do you apply it?
I just sort of sprinkle it in there with a spoon.
Okay. Nothing needs to be fed once a week.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, you know, a good feeding when it comes inside to reward it for the change it's about to go through. But also have some compost handy. If you don't make your own compost, buy a bag of premium compost. And when you do feed, cover the food with a layer of compost, because granulated plant food does not work unless it's covered by soil or compost. It has to change in form to become a nutrient for the plant, and it needs that natural help to do so. But it sounds like you're doing a lot right. If it gets really cold at that window, you know, don't be afraid to throw a heavy curtain or something over it. If we go through a freezing cold spell, make sure it doesn't get drafts. And when those flowers appear, you can hand pollinate them every day.
And then the last question is, if I'm seeing the tiny minuscule lemons now, is there any chance that those are going to ripen by Christmas like it did the first time? Because I don't recall when I started to see them. You know, I didn't know that I was going to have to put this much effort in 10 years ago. So should I see those minuscule?
You're talking about flowers now taking until Christmas to become lemons?
Yeah.
No, they grow much faster than that. They're supposed to.
Okay.
Generally, you bring them inside. They flower, let's say, 2 months later, you've got ripe lemons. Okay. That is their flowering time. That is their fruiting time. In the summertime, they're just out basking in the sun like us.
So was that an anomaly when I had them for Christmas?
Very much so, but everything's changed these days.
Oh, geez. Okay, so now every Christmas I'm devastated, but that wasn't even normal. Okay, I'm basing it on 1 year.
Throw a Valentine's Day party. Do something else. Even if they're only flowering, you know how great they make a room smell.
Oh, yeah, yes. Okay. All right, well, I'm going to try all these things. I appreciate the help, and I'll try to check back with you and let you know how I make out.
Okay, good luck to you.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and warn you to get ready to take some notes, because we will be right back to bring you important information about a simple way to prevent birds from flying into your windows. Just get back here quick, because we will be right back to deliver those important bird protection tips and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA.
For the past 3 decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to this service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, do you shun lawns because they're a waste of energy and use toxic chemicals? Guess what? I can tell you about how to care for a lawn that will reduce the time you spend on that lawn dramatically and explain that chemicals are the problems on your lawns. Once you stop using them and treat the lawn correctly, it will reward you with the best looking lawn in the neighborhood. You don't want to miss it, and you won't, because it'll be coming up after more of your fabulous phone calls and our interview right now with Jeff Akopian from birdsavers.com, who has both invented and cheerleaded a great way to prevent birds from crashing into windows. Jeff, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you, Mike.
Now, I think in the email I got from you recently, you were referring to an article that I had just read about the decline in all bird species.
That's correct.
Everywhere, across the board. The good news being there were still a lot of them left behind. But the bad news, it's always bad to have a decline in any large population like that. And part of the problem was habitat loss, which is universal among creatures who are being threatened, and bird strikes. And this was not from you or your company. This was in this massive worldwide studies. And it happens to all of us. And we know that in places like Las Vegas that are hit with light 24/7 and have these giant expanses of glass, these casinos, they need to hire people to sweep up the dead birds a couple of times a day because there's so many strikes. Because as you note, birds can't see through glass, especially when the sun is at a certain direction and everything like that. They're either going to see nothing, which is when they're going to hit the window with a thud, or they're going to see their own reflection and peck away at the window until they lose their bill or the window breaks. But either way, it's not good for the birds, and it has been a difficult problem for people to address. Now, I don't know how long it was ago that you were first on the show, first contacted me, but your family has a long history of engineering. I believe the name and the product is a tribute to your grandfather, who didn't invent anything like this, but he taught all you guys how to be inventors.
Mostly my dad.
Yeah, and it's remarkably simple. And it's something I should remind people about every year, because there's nothing worse than hearing that thud. And then do you go out and pretend there's something you can do, or do you just ignore it and hope that nobody else noticed? But you have a very simple solution, and it doesn't involve spinning pie plates or whirligigs or anything. Matter of fact, your solution is not only not obtrusive, people really like it because of the movement. So let's get right to Bird Savers. And you were kind enough, he's in the studio with me. This is a special treat cats and kittens. This doesn't happen very often. And what you've given me is very simple. You say this is parachute cord.
Yes.
Every 4 feet?
No, inches.
Every 4 inches, there is an attacher that attaches it just above your window. So that part is out of sight. And is it just press on?
Yeah, it's not every 4 inches where you attach it. It's on the ends. Let's say your window's 3 feet wide. You'd have attachment point on one end, the other end. And basically...
Oh, then the strings that hang down are 4 inches
apart.
Yes,
the strings that hang down, the cords, the paracord is 4 inches apart. And that's what keeps the birds from flying into the windows.
Right, but the attachers are just at the edges.
Yes, unless you have a long window, then you have something in the middle to hold it up so it doesn't start sagging. Like about every foot, we put something, or someone should put something.
So what I'm looking at as I hold it up is these metal things that you won't see, very unobtrusive. Every 4 inches, there is a, how long is it?
As long as the window. So if the window is 5 feet tall, it'll be just a tad like 1 inch under 5 foot. So there's a little bit of space on the bottom.
Okay, so every 4 inches, there is a thin thread, so to speak.
A cord.
Of parachute cord.
Yes.
A cord of cord. This allows the birds to see that they're flying into something.
Right. My theory is that they you know, the birds fly through trees. They don't hit the branches generally. So my theory is that they see the cords and they assume they're a branch and they don't hit it.
This has been shown to work very well, right?
Yes.
You've got studies and
yes.
stuff. So yes. Brag.
Brag. Okay. Well, the best example I can give that happened recently is in Houston Botanical Garden in Houston. They called me up about 2 years ago. And they had just spent a lot of money on bird-safe glass, supposed bird-safe glass. And their hummingbirds were still hitting the windows quite often. And they didn't know what to do. They called me up, and they said, "Do you think bird savers will help?" I said, "Yes." And so they ordered bird savers, and they put them up. And after a one-year study, it eliminated hummingbirds from hitting the windows, those windows that they were hitting before.
So if it prevents hummingbirds, which are small and fast, in theory, it eliminated all other bird strikes of bigger birds.
Yes. Now, still, anything you put on a window, there's still a chance a bird can hit it. I mean, birds can fly at the side of buildings with no windows, and
yeah.
they do that. It doesn't happen often, but it can happen. But yes, 4 inches apart, putting those cords will stop almost 100% of the birds hitting, almost.
Now, we're sitting in front of some really nice, large, industrial-size windows. So we would have this cord of paracord hanging down almost to the bottom, but it is not as obtrusive to us because it's not static.
Yes, it's really interesting because you tell someone putting cords in front of the windows and they think, "Oh, that sounds terrible." But there's so many people who have done this, and most of those people, the people I hear back from, they actually like the cords hanging there. It's kind of, a lot of people have told me it's got a calming effect on them, these cords hanging out the windows. I actually had one young lady tell me that she said, "I can't wait to own a house so I can put these bird savers on the windows because they have such a calming effect on me."
What's the other phrase that people...
Zen wind curtains is the other thing that we call them, but a lot of people have now taken their own names. They call them accopian cords or paracord curtains, but they're all accopian bird savers.
So you've got these cords, and in the least little breeze, they'll be moving around. But paracord is kind of heavy compared to like twine or something like that, so they don't move very quickly. Right? They just kind of gently sway. And as this young lady explained to you, I think you've heard from many people that outside of the bird protection, which makes them feel better about themselves as people, they either get so used to it they don't see them anymore, or, like she said, they have a calming effect because they're kind of moving with the wind.
Thus Zen wind curtains.
Yeah, and that way another little part of you is outside. Because obviously people who love big windows love looking at the woods mm-hmm. or the oil refinery or, you know, whether whatever they got. Hopefully it's woods. You know, then a part of them is outside experiencing yes. that breeze.
It's very interesting you said that because that's very true. I look at cords every day when I wake up. I look and see if the wind's blowing at all, and they almost are always moving. Even when you think there's no wind, you look at the bottom of the cords and it's like, oh, it's moving a little bit, so there must be a little bit of wind out there. It's very interesting.
Now, I love what you do, and I want to just stop for a moment and remind people that we're talking to Jeff Akopian of Akopian Bird Savers, but you don't have to try to figure out how to spell his name. Because the website is very simple, birdsavers.com. You can go on the website and you can have, I don't know who does your manufacturing, but you do, hands-on. Everyone, you should sign them. Everyone a work of art. And you will make them to a specified size and ship them. And then all they got to do is stick them to the corners of the top of the window, and they're good to go. There's no weight at the bottom to bang against the window or anything like that. It's just this gentle movement. But you're not in this to make money. You just want to do the right thing by the birds. So on your website, birdsavers.com, you have free instructions whereby people can make their own.
Yes.
You know, that's kind of giving away the horse there.
Yeah, well, the horse may be needed somewhere.
But of the response you get, what percentage want you to make it for them?
And I don't know, because
I guess you don't hear back from people who just make them themselves.
I encourage people to, if they make them, send me a photo. But, I mean, there's probably lots of people who have made them who don't tell me. Which is fine. I started about a year or two ago a page on the website called Where Are Bird Savers? Any that I sell, I put on there. And anybody who tells me that they made them, I put on there. Not those people, but if there's somebody in Easton made them, you'll see Easton listed, and I'll say DIY or how many we've sold in Easton.
If I remember correctly, when I was on your website, that list was not exhaustive. It was exhausting. There were a lot of listings.
Yeah, there's a lot of places, but not enough, because there's so many windows in the world. There's so many windows in the world that are killing birds. And it's not all windows. It's just certain windows kill birds. Not mm-hmm. all. It's not like if you see a window, it's going to be killing a bird. That's not necessarily true. You may even have a house that some one or two windows are killing birds or could be killing birds, and the other ones don't kill birds. But one of the problems is, how do you know it's going to kill birds until it kills a bird? And like you were saying before, what do? It kills a bird and you think, oh, well, this is unusual that a bird ran into my window. But it's not. It happens many places.
Now, I'm going to guess that the least safe windows for birds are like the Anderson-style windows, the uninterrupted big pieces of glass.
No, that's not true. In my backyard, in my garden, I have one little window. It's like 8 inches by 8 inches. And I saw a cardinal one day fly into that 8-inch by 8-inch window. So the size really has nothing to do with it.
So once again, this is really simple. It's very inexpensive.
It looks cool.
It looks nice. It is soothing. You can either buy it or make it yourself.
I recommend you make them.
You really do. Now, why is that?
Because I have so many things to do. I mean, I can't make all the bird savers that are needed in the world. If everybody this week went out who needed to stop birds from hitting their windows and made bird savers, the problem would be solved in a week. It would be that simple. But most people don't care. Bird hits the window, that's a one-off thing. It's not going to happen. But it happens all over the place.
Jeff, I just can't explain enough how much I love and respect the work you do.
Oh, thank you.
Not only coming up with this idea, but giving it away, what a friend of mine calls uncopyrighted. Free for all, put it to good use. So
thank you, Mike.
You get our highest endorsement.
Thank you for saying that.
All right. We have been talking with Jeff Akopian of Akopian Bird Savers, a.k.a. Zen Wind Curtains. The website is birdsavers.com. You can feed the birds and see them, too, and save them, too. It's just a great idea, and thank you for looking out for the birds. Last time, birdsavers.com. All right, thanks so much for being with us. And thanks again for coming into the studio. We get lonely in here sometimes.
It's nice in here.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Jeff. And best of luck. Continued good luck with your bird savers.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and thank Ozark Terry, who listens to our show on KSMU in Missouri. She kindly corrected me that the, quote, 3 mil plastic I discussed a few weeks ago was not 3 millimeters thick, as I said. I should have stopped right there, but of course I didn't. She writes, quote, 3 millimeters is approximately 1/8 of an inch thick. A mil is equal to 0.001 inches, and thus 3 mils is 0.003 inches thick, which is a heck of a lot less than 1/8 of an inch. But don't go doing the math just yet, because we'll be right back to help you have a beautiful looking lawn with much less work and no chemicals at all. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the studios of WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. Well, we have a great show all planned out for you next week. Problem is, we can't find the plans, but we will locate them in time to bring you a super excellent episode of You Bet Your Garden. I'm Mike McGrath, and that's all on the next You Bet Your Garden. Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the studios of NPR station WDIY-FM in Bethlehem, PA. I am still your host, Mike McGrath, and yes, cats and kittens, we are in the stretch. In just a little bit, I will teach you the dirty little secrets of lawn care that chemical companies do not want you to know. And that's coming up right after another of your fabulous phone calls at 610-694-8100. Matt, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike, this is Matt in Fairview, Tennessee.
Fairview. Now, what part of Tennessee is that?
35 miles southwest of Nashville.
Oh, okay. What can we do for you?
Well, I have an old wisteria or clematis that is invasive, and I can't get rid of it.
Okay. So I did some research and learned about, what is it called, the sweet autumn clematis, which is a true clematis, but it is an evil plant that is against the law to sell in many states, and it's classified as an invasive just about anywhere. But clematis and wisteria are two different plants. Does your invasive plant flower?
It used to. When it was crawling across my pergola, it flowered several years.
What color were the flowers?
Light blue, purple.
Okay. So now we're talking about wisteria, which is even worse. Did the vine eventually take down your structure?
Yeah, and I had a heck of a time with it.
They should not sell these plants. It should not have been available for you to buy. Now, how many roots do you see, or are they all over the place?
There are quite a few coming out of this large bed that's about 10 by 10.
Okay. When did you plant it in the bed?
Oh, it was probably 6 or 8 years ago.
Now, what have you done to try and control it?
Cut it back constantly, and I've sprayed it with industrial vinegar.
Okay.
But I haven't used anything else.
Well, that's not a bad start, but you haven't had any success, or it's down to just a small area of that one bed that keeps trying to regrow?
It's that one bed, but it escapes quickly. Like this spring, it grew, I don't know, probably 3 feet in one section in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it does have underground rhizomes that will sprout. So it's not an easy job. The first thing I'm going to suggest is you solarize that bed, which means you get a lawnmower, set it as low as it can go, and you mow that bed down literally until you see dirt blowing out of the mower. And then collect all that debris and put it in the trash. You don't want to keep any plant parts alive. You want clear plastic, 3 mil thick.
Okay.
So you absolutely layer the area flat. And then you get a hose or a couple of hoses and you saturate that soil. I mean 100% saturation. You're not going to water it. You're going to have a sprinkler going on it for 24 hours. You're going to have hoses dripping over it for 24 hours. Whatever you can do to make that soil almost liquid. Then you stretch the 3 mil plastic over top and hold it down at the edges with bricks. Over the course of a summer, if it gets enough sun and the temperature rises, that bed will be sterilized. Nice thing is, when you take off the plastic, within a month, new life floods right back into that bed, and it becomes more lively than before the solarization. Nobody knows why. But you don't make that a sterile soil. You actually make it a very healthy soil. And then you keep an eye, obviously, on the area around the bed. And I'm glad to see you got high-strength vinegar. Do you know what the acidity was? Is?
45%.
Oh, baby, doll, you're rocking. As soon as you see any signs of a plant coming up nearby, you wait until the hottest part of the day and really saturate that area with the vinegar. Now, that vinegar is very powerful, so be sure to wear eye protection. You don't want anything, any of that blowing back into your eyes. But if you stay at this, don't give it a chance to grow 3 feet or anything like that. If you make this literally a daily routine on every dry day, you will exhaust the root. That's the issue. If you prevent the plant from developing green growth above ground, the root will starve. Okay. So the solarization, if you're lucky, should work in 1 year. If not, it may be the same situation where you're going to have little sprouts trying to come back. Get them before they can develop true leaves, and the roots will starve to death. It may take a couple of seasons, but you're going to turn around 2-3 years from now and go, oh, it worked. It's gone.
I hope so.
You got a big job. Take it seriously. Clear plastic, high-strength vinegar. I like what you got, and I think you're going to do fine.
Great. I appreciate your help.
All right. Good luck, Matt.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
As promised, it is time for the question of the week, which we are calling the secret path to a weed-free lawn. We received a very brief Gmail from Sheila, quote, here in the Lehigh Valley, that simply said, I heard you on WDIY, which is our presenting NPR station here in Bethlehem, PA, on my way home from work. And I have a question on how to get rid of dandelions and weeds naturally from our lawn. Well, that's great fodder for a lawn care question of the week, which is long overdue, but extremely information free. So I replied with a few of my basic lawn care questions, and her responses made me realize just how overdue we were for a good lawn care discussion. She writes, the lawn is a pretty regular size for most houses in our area. It takes my husband 2 hours to cut both the front and back of the house using a corded, electric, human-powered push mower. He used to, quote, weed and feed the grass a long time ago, but stopped when we had kids. The lawn is mostly grass, but we see a lot of crabgrass as well. Our neighbors treat their lawns, but we don't. Well, God bless the children. Most people don't think about the harmful effects of lawn chemicals on their own health, but when their kids and grandkids start crawling on the turf, many parents decide they'll, quote, put up with weeds so they can have a safe place for the kids to play. But the dirty little secret of lawn care is that lawns don't need to be treated, and there's no reason to, quote, put up with weeds. Weeds are the direct result of poor lawn care, not lack of toxic treatments. Follow a few simple rules, and your lawn will look better than a treated lawn, not to mention that it'll also be better for your health, soil life, birds, bees, pets, and pollinators. As I learned about lawns over the years, I came to realize the importance of the turf being tall enough so that there was plenty of green to collect the solar energy needed for photosynthesis, and that the biggest impediment to having a healthy weed-free lawn is cutting the grass too short in the mistaken idea that you won't have to mow as often. Wrong. The cool season grasses like bluegrass and fescue that predominate in most areas need to be between 3 and 3.5 inches high after cutting to thrive. It's simple logic. Grass is a plant. Plants rely on their leaves to process sunlight for energy. Remove too much of that green and they go into shock. Instead of growing at a nice slow pace, they push all the remaining energy into sending up shoots in a manic attempt to catch as much sunlight as possible. And because this new growth is scattered and uneven, the lawn looks ratty. The lawn owner, of course, notes the ratty look and figures the lawn should be cut again. And maybe this time they should cut it shorter. And so they spend the summer blowing dirt out the back of their mower, trying hard to kill their grass, making it so weak that bare patches show up. And because the exhausted lawn hasn't had any energy to devote to the root growth that would otherwise crowd them out, weeds move in. Raise the cutting height on your mower to what will probably be its highest setting, and your lawn will have enough green left after cutting to finally have some energy to spend on that root growth. And the deeper and healthier your roots, the less room there is for weeds to gain a foothold. A properly maintained lawn will crowd out weeds on its own, and it will grow at the slowest possible rate because it is no longer in a blind panic. And the best way to achieve and maintain that height is with a mulching mower. Grass blades are 10% nitrogen. The perfect lawn fertilizer is 10% nitrogen. Mulching mowers have no exit hole to shoot the clippings out the side or bag them up. Instead, those clippings are trapped inside a sealed deck where super sharp blades constantly cut and recut them until they drop back into the lawn in virtually invisible pulverized form, feeding your turf with the most natural lawn food possible in the perfect amount every time you cut. Which brings us to the second crucial aspect of responsible mowing, a sharp blade. A sharp blade makes a nice clean cut that heals quickly to retain water. A dull blade rips and shreds the grass blades, making them unable to hold water. The best investment you can make for your lawn is to buy a new blade every season or have the old blade sharpened. If you are replacing the blade, wrap the old one in duct tape and recycle it with your metal cans and such. And that's it. After a full season of cutting at the correct height, again, never shorter than 3 inches, with a sharp blade, your lawn will be a true sea of green, and your weeds will slowly disappear, even without you ever directly having to deal with them. And for the impatient among you, I will reveal how to greatly reduce those existing weeds, like dandelions and crabgrass, this season when I see you again. Well, that sure was some timely advice about growing a great-looking lawn with a lot less work and zero chemicals, now wasn't it? Luckily, you can read the written details over at your leisure or your leisure by following the link for the Gardens Alive Question of the Week at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Yikes! My producer is threatening to cut my grass to the ground if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 610-694-8100. That's 610-694-8100, extension 3. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse teeming to our garden shore at youbetyourgarden1@gmail.com. Either way, please include your location. And be sure to visit our Facebook page for something new every day, important information about the show, our phone number, our Gmail address, a link to the written version of the Gardens Alive Question of the Week, and links to our priceless podcast platforms. It's all at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. You Bet Your Garden is a public radio show and podcast produced and delivered to you every week from the studios of NPR station WDIY in Bethlehem, PA. You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created by Frank Miller on a dark and stormy night. Thanks to our special guest, avian protector Jeff Occupain. You can learn more about his fabulous bird savers, including how to make your own, at thebirdsavers.com. Our musical director is Ken Queter. Our social media director is Amanda Norfleet. Our peerless Prince of Profound production is James Ziprope. Margaret McConnell is the executive director of WDIY-FM. Our executive producer is the always lovely Jonas Bowen. And our incredible assistant is the awesome ninja, Sean. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. And after enduring a prolonged period of drought, am now enjoying our prolonged period of rain, except for my aching back. But I also can't wait for that rain to stop so I can get my growing too tall tomatoes in the ground before I see you again next week.